Well, good to see you all here. I want to mention that George Barna had an announcement in Christianity Today magazine. Now, he used to be in marketing of Christianity. That was his job, to market Christianity, to sell the program, to tell people that Christianity had a lot of virtues. And he had a 10-year plan that he was working with, telling us that he was going to do all these things in 10 years. Well, he failed. And the comments that he has about Christianity, I thought, was very enlightening. In fact, he said that in his 10-year plan, that he found that religious energy may be experienced through new forms of music, new dramatics, new architecture. But he said it's the same old thing in a different wrapper. Christianity doesn't take you anywhere. He was highly critical of Christianity in general, saying it just didn't cut it. And he said there has to be an initial shake-up of Christianity. And more of the same simply won't do it. Doing the same thing all over again and painting the picture a little brighter doesn't really change what's going on. I thought it was rather interesting that here was a man that spent his lifetime practically trying to sell Christianity and saying now it doesn't work. Christianity is failing. Christianity offers nothing. Well, Christianity, maybe, but he also went on to say, well, turn with me to Matthew, the 13th chapter. He said, this is one of the problems in Matthew 13. In Matthew 13, as you might know, is a parable of the sower and the crops in Israel. And what is so interesting is that he chose this to point out some of the failures and why they failed. So in chapter 13, move on down there to verse 14. And you'll notice it reads, this is Yahshua speaking. Verse 14 says, we should really start with verse 13. He explains why he spoke to the people in parables. He said, I speak to them in parables because seeing they see not, and hearing they hear not. Neither do they understand. Then he goes on to quote in verse 14. He says that in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which said, by hearing you shall hear and shall not understand. Seeing you shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, hear with their ears, should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. So that's a direct quote from Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 9. So what we have here is something interesting, that even in the Old Testament, it makes no difference if you're a Jew who rejects the New Testament or a Christian that accepts both a little bit of the Old and tries to say they accept the New. They're getting the same message no matter which one they are, because it's in the Old Testament and it's also in the New. And this is Yahweh's doing, because there are certain people that will listen to what is being said, but they don't really have the heart to obey it. And that is the problem. Excuse me. And this is why he said that they are dull of hearing, their eyes they've closed. And then he says that he deliberately has closed the eyes and the heart and the mind of some people. Sometimes we talk about this verse and people get the idea that it's Yahweh's fault that they can't understand. Excuse me. But actually, in his mercy, there are certain people that he knows if they hear the truth, they will be like some of the ones that you read here in verse 3 and 4, that the seeds fell by the wayside and the fowls came and gathered them up. ate them. Or they fell on stony places, and they didn't last long enough to really get rooted. And in verse 5, he says, they sprung up and had no deepness of earth, and the sun came up. When things got a little rough, got hot, they were scorched because they had no root, and they withered away. Verse 7, he says, some fell upon thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. But he said, those that fell on good ground, those are the ones he's working with, even today. Those that are willing to do what George Barna said, the churches simply are not teaching their whole truth. They're just dabbling a little bit. And if you ever watch it, it's almost like watching a big production of some classic movie or something. And it's beautiful. Singing is beautiful. The music is beautiful. The painted, not painted, but the stained glass windows are beautiful. But there's something missing. And this is what George Barnes is saying. It's simply not there. He says, Christianity is a costless faith. You can be a Christian and it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to even claim that you support it. You can just claim to be a born-again Christian. And I thought it was rather interesting that he went to that point. And he went on to say that unless you have to struggle to overcome some of these things, that you really are not putting your heart and soul into learning what true Christianity is all about. Of course, we know a little bit more than that. We know that Christianity by itself simply is not the religion that we're supposed to be studying. We should be studying what the Bible says and not get off into little side issues. Also, he said, born again is easy sailing. He said, when do we get to the point at which we accept smaller numbers of intensely devoted people rather than feverishly filling auditoriums and stadiums with massive numbers of lukewarm Christians? So, as I read that, I thought about it. I thought, well, we should rejoice that we have the ones we have. Because if we're going to be a big group, we'll probably end up being like these people with their glass houses and having all of the accoutrements of a TV production. But he said they feverishly filled auditoriums with massive numbers of lukewarm Christians. I don't know if you have ever read read Halley's little handbook. But back there on about page 712, I believe it is, he tells about how the early converts were actually pagans. And they made it so easy for them to believe all they had to do is accept the Messiah. And they were automatically became Christians. And I thought it was rather interesting. Halley said that they filled the churches with pagan converts. Instead of becoming a Christian, the church became pagan with all the things that they brought along with them. So we have, to me it was amazing that this man would spend his time and energy talking about how he failed and he saw no light at the end of the tunnel. Well, I hope that we probably are able to help some of them if they're willing to listen. But anyway, we know that there's never going to be a great number turning over to Yahweh's truth. And as a matter of fact, if you want to turn to Revelation chapter 3, I want you to notice what we find there in Revelation chapter 3. And notice in verse 16, rather interesting. He says, so then, first of all, he's talking about the verse 15, about the works, that they are neither cold nor hot. And then he says, I wish you would be either cold or hot, not this lukewarm stuff. And this basically was an interjection that I thought was interesting, because verse 16 says, "Because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth. Because you say I am rich and increased with goods." And he likened the early, or the present day church to be one of those that has everything they want, but they don't have to pay the bride price to be the bride of Messiah. Verse 17 says, "I am rich, increased with goods, have need of nothing, and know not that you are wretched, miserable, and poor, blind and naked. I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire," that is, tried under severe conditions, "that you may be rich." Of course, this is a warning that being tried means we might be sometimes tempted to do other things and to bypass Yahweh's word. Excuse me. So we are told in verse 18 to buy eyesight that we can see, to pay the price, to understand what Yahweh says in his word. And he says that we may be clothed. In verse 19, "As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent." I thought that was interesting that he had gone into those things to talk about the various problems that they have. Along with in the book of Revelation, as you well know, in chapters 2 and 3, there are seven assemblies. And there are seven of them. And briefly, they are not all perfect. Notice here in chapter 2, we have the one at Ephesus. And verse 3, he says, "You have borne and had patience. For my name's sake, you have labored and you have not fainted." In spite of that, he said, even though you cling to my name, there are still some things that you've done. You've left your first love of the word, to understand it, to follow it, to learn what it says, and then be a follower and a doer of the word. And then in verse 7, he talks about overcoming. Every single one of these assemblies is to overcome. And you'll notice here, in verse 8, we have Smyrna. And in verse 12, we have Pergamos. And in verse 18 is Thyatira. Anyway, each one of these assemblies, except for the one at Philadelphia, Sardis has to overcome, but when you get to Philadelphia, you'll find there in chapter 3 and verse 7, "To the angel at the assembly in Philadelphia write, these things says he that is holy," that is true, "and has the key of David, he that opens and no man shuts, shuts and no man opens. I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door. No man can shut it, for you have little strength and have not denied my name." So he says that this is one assembly that he is looking forward to. But he also gave him a warning in verse 11, even the one that he really didn't criticize. He says, "Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have, that no man takes your crown. He that overcomes, I will make a pillar in the temple of my Elohim. He shall go no more out, and I'll write upon him the name of my Elohim, the name of the city of my Elohim, which is New Jerusalem." Rather strange how the New Jerusalem is talking about a body of believers, and here we find it back in chapter 3 and also over in the later chapters 20 and 21. Now, in excuse me, in chapter 10 of Matthew, I want you to go back there if you will. In chapter 10, we have an interesting comment by Yahshua, and he's sending out the people. And in Matthew chapter 10, he gets into a little discussion there about sending out the people in chapter 10. And notice in verse 5, he tells them to go not into the way of the Gentiles, not to the Samaritans, but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And he tells them the kingdom is at hand. Just the other, well, at the Feast of Tabernacles, I was asked this question. What does it mean in verse 14? Whosoever shall receive you shall not receive you, nor hear your words when you depart out of that house or city, shake the dust off of your feet. What does that really mean? Well, if you're associating with the world, you have to be careful you don't bring some of that world back in with you. If you shake the dust off your feet and leave the dust out there, the dirt, and don't take part in what the world is all wrapped up in. It's always easy to get wrapped up in what the world is doing and understand that, to say to leave that part out. Don't let it be a part of your life, a part of you, and so on. And one of those things that we have to watch all the time. Little things keep encroaching on what we're doing. Okay, I want to share something else with you. Over in the book of Exodus, you want to go over there, please. Book of Exodus. This is in dealing with people, and when they ask questions and so on, sometimes we have some problems we don't really know how to answer. But in Exodus, I want you to take a look at Exodus chapter 20. And I want you to move down here to verse 8. Now, verse 8 is important because verse 8 in chapter 20 says to remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your works. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh, your Elohim. In it you shall not do any work, you, your son, or your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor any stranger that's in your gate. For 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, and the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, or wherefore, Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. The reason I wanted to bring this up, because I have a letter from a person that wanted to know about keeping the Sabbath. He said, why do you always say we should keep the holy days? Here it refers only to the weekly Sabbath, I was told. Well, I want you to go over to the book of Deuteronomy. And this individual said in the book of Deuteronomy, all we have to worry about is the Ten Commandments. We don't have to do anything else. Deuteronomy, chapter 31. I thought this was rather interesting that it tied in with what I was reading with George Barna and what he was saying. Notice here in Deuteronomy 31 and verse 24. Now, the book of Deuteronomy, as you know, is different than the one in Exodus, the Ten Commandments. But basically, the book of Deuteronomy is experience of 40 years living in the wilderness and the problems they had, and how Moses was able to rectify and actually expand upon the usage of the law that was given at Sinai. But notice here in this 31st chapter, and we move on down to verse 24. We're in Deuteronomy 31:24. It came to pass when Moses had made an end of writing the words, he put this law in a book until they were finished. And Moses commanded the Levites, which were bear the ark of the covenant of Yahweh, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the sight of the ark of the covenant of Yahweh your Elohim, that it may be there for a witness against you. Now, I understand what it really means is that in the ark, where they carried it with poles, you know, on both sides, that there was a place there for the writings that Moses did back there in the chapters 21, 22, 23, and 24 of the book of Exodus. But I want you to notice this. This individual said to me, there are two laws. One was put inside the Ark of the Covenant. The other is put alongside of it in verse 26. So they're two separate laws. And the first law that went into the Ark told about the weekly Sabbath. Then, well, you have to go over to the 10th chapter here of Deuteronomy 2 to get the context. I want to go over this because I think sometimes this question comes up, and I think there's a Seventh-day Sabbath group that actually teaches this. But in the 10th chapter, notice here, beginning at verse 1, Yahweh said, we're in Deuteronomy 10:1, Yahweh said unto me, hew thee two tablets of stone like unto the first, and come up unto me into the mount, and I will make you an ark of wood. And I will write on the tables the words that were in the first tables, which you break, and you shall put them in the ark. So you got the two tables where Yahweh himself wrote the Ten Commandments, and he was to put them in the ark. Verse 3, and I made an ark of shittim wood, and hewed two tables of stone like unto the first. Because you remember he broke them when he came down from the mountain. They had this big party going on. So he had the two tables in his hand. Verse 4, and he wrote on the tables, according to the first writing, the Ten Commandments, which Yahweh spake unto you in the mount out of the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly, and Yahweh gave them unto me. And I turned myself and came down from the mount. I put the tables in the ark, which I had made, and there they be, as Yahweh had commanded. So what he's saying here, he's put these in the ark. Now we read over here in chapter 31 that there were some more laws put alongside of the ark. So what they're going to try and tell you is that there are two separate laws. Now, here's what we want to do now is go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. When you come to Deuteronomy 5, let's go down to verse 8. Well, verse 8, 9, and 10 actually talk about the not making any things to worship, any idols, and so on. But we certainly should here begin with verse 12. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 12. Notice he says, keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it as Yahweh your Elohim has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But in the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh your Elohim. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your ox, nor the ass, nor any of thy cattle, a stranger that is within thy gates, that the manservant and the maidservant may rest as well as you. And remember, now, we're coming into something new here that is written in the Deuteronomy book that's not in the one over in Exodus. And verse 15 says, remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt, that Yahweh your Elohim brought you out through a mighty and an outstretched out arm. Therefore, Yahweh commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Here in verse 15 and 16, verse 15, excuse me, we have a Redeemer mentioned. It's an expanded translation, you might say. It's expanding on what he said back in Exodus 20. And he added a few more words to it. And the Redeemer, you see, brought you out through a mighty hand. My point is that I thought the man was very clever in referring to Deuteronomy 31, but he wouldn't go to chapter 5 here. He went back to 20 of the book of Exodus to try to prove nothing new was added. Well, here we got a whole verse that's been added. And yet we know in the book of Exodus, Moses wrote all these things down, and it was ratified. In fact, we ought to go back there. Exodus chapter 24. We'll start there, huh? Exodus 20, of course, is where the law is given and the making of the covenant. And then they continued to write down what Yahweh was telling him. And when you get over to chapter 23, we should stop there. Notice these are what were written down. In verse 13, he talks about the no other Elohim. Verse 14, he talks about no three times in a year to keep a feast. And verse 15, he talks about the unleavened bread. And he gives them the three times that they're supposed to meet. When you keep reading these things, you'll find in chapter 23, the end of it, he talks about the writing all these things down. And be careful and not to let the enemy make a snare of them. In chapter 24 and verse 3, he writes down everything that was said from Exodus 20 to chapter 23 inclusive. And so he says, verse 3, that Moses came and told the people all the words that Yahweh said, all the judgments. People answered with one voice, all the words which Yahweh said, we will do. He didn't leave any out. He said, we'll keep all of them. Verse 4, Moses wrote all these things down, even keeping of the law of the sabbatical years. He rose up early in the morning. And he had 12 pillars he made, excuse me, for the 12 tribes of Israel. And notice in verse 5, he sent the young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings and oxen and so on. He took the blood, put it in basins, half the blood he sprinkled on the altar, took the book of the covenant, read it in the audience of the people, and they said, all that Yahweh has said, we will do. And then they added, and be obedient. If he says anything else, we'll do that too. So here we have Moses writing all these things down. The people agree to it. And yet this individual said that we don't have to keep anything but the weekly Sabbath. We don't have to keep the annual Sabbath. But they were written down. And then we have here, of course, the sealing of the covenant with blood. And actually, You'll find that this was the covenant that was probably sealed on the time of the day of Pentecost. It's hard to prove, and it's rather involved. But for an example, in this 24th chapter, in verse 15 and 16, Moses goes up to the mount, and he stayed there 6 days, or the cloud covered it 6 days. And the seventh day, he called unto Moses out of the cloud, and the sight of the glory of Yahweh was like devouring fire on top of the mountain, and so on. Anyway, most of these scholars contend this was probably when the day of Pentecost came that this took place. Anyway, the interesting point is that if somebody tells you that we don't have to keep but the Ten Commandments because they were written on marble or stone, we don't have to keep the other ones because they were put inside or alongside the ark, not inside the ark, I think sometimes they're really stretching to try to do away with Yahweh's law. And I just bring that up because sometimes I felt that once you understood the Sabbath, it was a natural progression to go on to keeping the weekly along with the annual Sabbath as well. And I didn't realize that there were Sabbath keepers that said we didn't have to keep any but the Ten Commandments, and that included only the seventh-day Sabbath. But anyway, the Adventists, I know, still are clinging to trying to keep only the Sabbath and not the feast days. But I thought that they are learning that maybe they should be keeping some of these. Anyway, George Barna was an interesting writer, and it was kind of amazing to me that his assessment, after all his work keeping track of the various churches in Christianity, and concluding that there is no way that they are true in keeping what Yahweh has given us. And I think we all agree that there are two commandments that most of the churches do away with. And that is the one that says we should not use his name in vain, take it in vain, or anyway get rid of it. And the other one is keeping the weekly and annual Sabbath. Kind of a short study, but I was really interested in the letter that I got about trying to say if the law is alongside the ark, we don't have to obey it. I think we have to obey